This is the November 14 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Kevin Van Trump of the Van Trump Report and Arlen Suderman from StoneX. We'll talk with them in just a moment, but I would like to remind you to visit our website, willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org, where today you can register for the Farm Assets and the Illinois Farm Economics Series Summits. They're all part of the same group, the Agricultural Economists. The Farm Doc team from the University of Illinois will be on the road in the month of December. We'll kick that off with the Farm Assets Conference on Friday the 13th at the I Hotel on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. At that particular meeting, you'll see all of the IFRS or Illinois Farm Economics Summit Series presentations by the Farm Doc team, plus the crop scientist, and we'll have a few more surprises as well. You can see the agenda at willag.org, and then the following week, we'll be on the road in Mount Vernon, as well as East Peoria and DeKalb. Catch up with only the Farm Doc team. Again, all four of them have the Farm Doc team on them. You'll see all those presentations at any of the four. Just more information at the Farm Assets Conference in Champaign. Cost is just $80. Sign up today. Now, the folks that are on the road a lot, all the time with meetings, are with us. Arlen Suderman, he is here, as well as Kevin Van Trump. Thank you to both of you for joining us here at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City. It's odd for me to be with you in your home states rather than for you to be coming to me. So it's kind of fun, I suppose, for you not to have to go very far. However, I've talked to both of you enough this week already to know that you're not that great a news for farmers. I was listening to you talk about soybeans in Brazil and here and what prices might look like. Doesn't sound, Kevin, as if you're all that excited about soybeans going forward.
No, I'm not, Todd. Like I said, I'm holding a bearish position numerous different ways. I'm in some spreads. I'm short some outright flat price, and I've been that way for quite a while. So, I think we're probably going lower is where I'm at. Probably been the most sold we've ever been sold as far as advanced sales, and got a floor under everything that's unpriced. So, yeah, I'm not the bull here you want to probably be talking to, and I'm usually pretty optimistic and bullish, but yeah, no, we're just a little worried here moving forward. So I'm interested to hear what Arlen has to say too.
Well, I'm interested to hear what Arlen has to say, and you saying that you are bearish and short in several or numerous different ways probably did not go well on the farm side as they were thinking about this. Arlen, are you also not very happy about what the price outlook like me? Outlook for soybeans might be?
Yeah, I think for soybeans, you have to work the hardest to come up with a supportive story overall, because things are looking real good in Brazil. I talked yesterday to our people down there, and they said the crop is really looking good across Brazil. And even with reports of dryness in Paraguay and Argentina, they said the crop's looking good there as well, although it's early there and a lot of time to go yet. As you look at it, and you really have to search for some reason to be bullish, and it may happen. So if you're looking for something to search for, and I certainly wouldn't want to build a marketing plan around this because the odds are so low. But as we talk to our people in China, they're looking at three possible scenarios going forward with the Trump presidency. And one of those scenarios is that China, it would be desperate enough to avoid tariffs on goods coming to the United States, that they would come up, they would agree to a trade agreement to buy more corn and soybeans from the United States. I don't know if we could trust them on that, such agreement based on the history. It may take a year or two to get such an agreement, but right now that's the closest I can come to trying to build something friendly or something bullish for soybeans until unless we have a major weather problem going forward.
That's a continuation just of the phase one agreement, which has been completed. I'm not certain that everybody understands that that was done and finished, and that the Chinese purchased about 75% of what their expected purchases were out of that. So not even that made full reparations or full purchases from the United States. Kevin, do you think that Donald Trump might be able to pull that kind of deal off with the Chinese? Would they pick up in phase one without having a tit for tat or some kind of trade war in the midst of it?
Yeah, I think that I wouldn't bet against him. That's what I'm saying. I think there's a ton of wild cards in the deck still with what happens in Washington. We're sitting there thinking it's probably going to be some tough negotiations at first. So that's why we think, you know, you could get some more bearish headlines to get the funds and the algos leaning more on the bearish side of it. But yeah, I do believe there's a great demand story and beans a little bit longer term, but I just don't know how long it takes us to get there. Between now and then is the part we're worried about. And I kind of said earlier, I feel like with our investments and our trades and different ag businesses we're in, it's kind of who can hold their breath the longest underwater here. And I hope we don't have to hold it too long, Todd. I mean, I don't know. I just don't know how long it takes us to get from, like you're saying, how long it'll take Trump to squeeze or put the negotiations on or to turn the tide there. But it's certainly at this point, it feels like China wants to continue to buy their beans from Brazil. You know, we own some farm, we're partners in farms through Brazil, and it seems like China, you know, they like the crush of the Brazilian beans. I think they think they get a little better pop out of it and a little better protein level. So they've always tended to lean that way anyway. And you can see it in any data you look at. I mean, they're just continuing. Brazil gains more and more market share from China, but I think China's peaking out a little bit anyway. And so, you know, we got to look for the next great thing, and it'll be interesting to see how this group in Washington plays this whole biofuel space.
Okay. So I don't know how well you know this part of the story, Arlen, but he mentioned that the Chinese think that they might get a bit more protein out of soybeans coming out of Brazil. That dry end to the season probably put more protein in the soybean by weight, not more, but by weight, and oil probably went away. Does that make us more competitive, the United States, on the marketplace? Will they recognize that? Is that a possibility? I'm looking for stories to help write this story that you said, don't count on it, probably not something, but you started the process. How do we write a story that's better for soybeans?
Well, in theory, yes, that should help us. But they're aware of that now, and it so far it hasn't, and they're really behind in buying. And if you look at the months they were importing from Brazil, they were importing 10, 11, sometimes 12 million metric tons a month. Their projections when they're leaning on us are 5, 6 million metric tons, sometimes less than 5 million metric tons. Now, as we look at December and January, they've only bought a third of what we expected that they would import during December, and about 10% of what they were expected to import in January. So I thought, okay, we asked them what they're going, why they're so slow in buying hand to mouth. And they said, we don't want to be seen as influencing the election. But you would think then, if that were the case, then after the election, with these prices being where they are, that they would have really picked up their buying to get that coverage on, because they were late in doing so. But we really haven't seen that yet. So that really makes us worry about just where they're at, or are they just building a negotiating position?
Or do they have an issue with their economy that's deeper than we thought it might be, would be the other question.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. Chinese economy is, you know, a big question mark, and that they're doing some economic stimulus and quite a bit of economic stimulus should be a windfall and should have created a little bit of tailwind. I mean, I'll give you one positive silver lining, Todd, that we always think about is that as we become, like we did in wheat, we became the world's ancillary supplier of wheat, and we're becoming that in beans, it looks like. But as the world leans more on Argentina and Brazil, those countries, their politics are a lot more unstable. So you're going to get pops. I mean, there's going to be something happen. They're going to have some crazy type of strike or trade deal go bad, or who knows what could happen in Argentina, the way that the government turns over and inflation. So I'm just saying, when those pops come and those headlines come and we get those spikes, you got to be selling into it. It's similar to wheat when you had Russia go into Ukraine and we got that massive pop in wheat. I mean, we sold 2 years out. I mean, I think as we become more the ancillary supplier and people are buying from those low-cost people, there's some volatility. I think it's going to raise the volatility because they're not as reliable to deliver. That's all.
Your advice to producers on wheat and how to handle that, how does it differ from corn and soybeans? Because we are the ancillary supplier. We're the last resort. Go to the United States. So when Russia goes into Ukraine, we have not just a pop, but an enormous pop on that. And I suspect that like Kevin, you were looking further out and what producers should do, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, exactly right. So with interest rates being higher, it certainly comes in a situation, does it pay to store? Do you reown it on paper type of thing? But now that we're in the time of year where we are, What do you do with what you have left? What do you do about new crop wheat? Will we get a pop here in the wheat market to take advantage of? And I do see some more opportunities there. Certainly a brighter picture than what we see with soybeans. Not that I'm overly bullish, because we have a lot of wheat in this country, especially hard red winter wheat. But who sets the world cash wheat price? It's the Black Sea. And as we look to the Black Sea, we see Russia and Ukraine both significantly pulling back on their exports as we get into February, maybe even as early as January, in amount they can export, because they're running tight on supplies, exportable supplies. Once we do that, then it starts to become, okay, where else do we get wheat? And it'll be driven by the quality. So the first thing, the first indication of that would be hard red spring prices starting to move higher. The second would be soft red winter. Soft red winter right now is competitive on the world market as we've come down. It's now competitive. White wheat would be in higher demand. Next would be hard red winter wheat coming in last. And so we're starting to see that work out in the spreads, but really looking toward, as we get into the new calendar year, the last half of the marketing year, where that starts to play out. Is that bullish wheat when we have such large stocks of well over 800 million bushels? I wouldn't say it's bullish, but it does mean that we get less margin for error. And if we get a weather problem then in the spring, a spring freeze or something like that, that can give you a real good pop to sell in the market. If we get a weather problem, you know, we still got problems in the Black Sea. They've had some showers to take them into winter, but the overall weather pattern really hasn't changed. So there's risk there. Production estimates of 81 to 85 million metric tons for next year, which means they're going to be limited in their exports next year as well. So generally, exporter stocks outside the United States are fairly snug going into this next year. Not a lot of margin for error. So I think we'll have some rallies to sell along the way.
So again, on the marketing plans, is this related to the differences? And I just don't know. There appears to be, and Kevin, I'll come back to you on this as well, a difference in the way you think about marketing corn and soybeans as compared to wheat, and that you take, that Kevin is taking a much longer term version of what that marketing plan should be. Not, I'm marketing this year's crop, then I'm marketing next year's crop. He's marketing this year's crop, next year's crop, and maybe thinking about a third year's crop out because of the way U.S. wheat is used on the global stage. Is that something that you do as well?
Yeah, certainly. I think there's some sense to that. But with wheat, we've snugged up exporter stocks enough. Now we're seeing some bigger crops in the southern hemisphere to offset some of that. Like I said, I'm not really bullish, but I think we'll see some rallies with the carry, take advantage of the carry in the market, where you can take advantage and you can still get a return on it. And going forward, I think corn is probably between the two of them, although we've certainly had stronger fall exports than what I expected. I thought that'd come a little later. But the wheat story, I feel a little bit better about where we're going to be in the last half of the marketing year for doing some of that, finishing up the old crop, getting more aggressive in the new crops going forward.
Kevin, I am right that you take a much longer term picture with wheat when you're thinking about marketing plans than you do with corn or soybeans, meaning I'm looking forward much further to try to evaluate when I might be able to get a pop and or wait for it, whether it's a year out or 2 years out, and what kind of planning does that take?
Yeah, I would agree. Just because, you know, our contention is the wheat market's somewhat kind of broken just because you have funds want to pour everything into soft red winter for the most part. And so your open interest is way more than what we produce. So it's like, it can get goofy at times. And that's where we say, you know, that provides you that opportunity to spread it and to be further out in the deferred contracts. So that's what we like to do, is get further out into the deferreds when those opportunities arise. And, you know, from a spec position, we're right in line pretty much with I'm long. Personally, I'm long hard red over soft red in the March contract. Just thinking, if we do turn, I think the higher proteins are going to be in play. And hard red's been getting cheaper than soft red. You know, every time it dips down, maybe a dime, 20 under soft red, we're adding some and thinking maybe it'll turn once you get past the new year.
I want to come back to soybeans for the moment, talk about what producers can or should maybe do as it relates to marketing that crop and how they wait it out at this point. Then we'll get to corn. So, Arlen, from the elevator system, how far along do you believe the U.S. farmer is marketing the 2024-5 soybean crop?
I think it varies by region and what we've seen. It's been kind of a varying by basis and what their opportunities were in their local situation. But overall, I think that they were more aggressive in marketing soybeans than corn coming into this harvest period, because I think they understood the fundamentals. I think they understood that soybeans had a little bleaker outlook longer term, and so they were a little bit more aggressive there. Unfortunately, the United States doesn't have a good survey system to keep tabs at the time on what marketing levels are at. It's kind of an anecdotal type of a feel for it versus we can tell you pretty well where Brazil's at on farmer selling. But the farmer, I think, was more aggressive with soybeans than with corn.
Why do you know how far along Brazil's farmers are? What is the system that tells you that?
Oh, we've got customer surveys in Brazil that are quite successful in being able to do that. And they were way behind. And that's a factor that our farmers tend to forget, is they're not the only ones selling against the Chicago market. Brazil is as well. They were way behind in both soybeans and corn. They've caught up in a normal levels of selling now in soybeans, because they too see that maybe a bleaker outlook down the road. But on corn, they're still lagging their normal percent of crop sold a little bit. Some of that's because of the concern about the safrinha crop, yet it's still early there. And so they're late in selling it relative to what they would normally be, with the way the soybean crop went in a little bit later. But on soybeans, they're caught up, and that's less of a factor now weighing on the soybean market.
Wait, you're telling me that farmers in Brazil fill your customer surveys out, and farmers in the United States are less likely to do so?
Well, they're more industry surveys, you know, who the grain buyers are and stuff, who are filling it out and stuff. And so we see far more willingness to really respond to those surveys with our Brazil survey than we do here in the States.
Oh, we'll have to take up why you think that is at a later date. I think there's a lot to unpack in that statement in particular. Now, let's talk about what marketing can look like. Let's put farmers at 60% sold on soybeans in the United States. So are you at 40, or where are you?
I mean, I would say they're probably 50%, maybe. I don't know, a little lower than 60, but we're at 70, but I don't know. You know, everyone keeps saying they don't have near as much sold as we had sold, but I don't know.
Yeah. So the question is, you don't have enough sold. What are you doing with that you have to sell? And you didn't sell the rally last week.
Yeah, I haven't. No, we didn't price any recently. We've been kind of staying patient here. We did on the one rally up a few weeks back, but in September. But no, we haven't priced any as of late. And we've got a floor under everything that was unpriced. Now, if you don't have anything priced, I mean, if you haven't priced it by now, you're a gambler. So, I mean, you might as well go ahead. And I had one of my buddies tell me, I said, when are you going to price it? And they said, when my wife finally puts the foot down and says it's time to price the bushels. And I said, yeah, that's a good exit strategy. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know, Todd, honestly, you know, where you go at this point. I don't know. What's the downside? Or maybe you get to $9. Maybe you get, the big bears are at $8.80, $8.50. But I don't know if you get that low. I mean, I don't know. Depends what Trump does.
Well, you said something there about putting a floor under the market, at least. And I think that's something that farmers really need to look at, especially for soybeans, as a floor. You know, we're down in that territory to test the August lows. That gives way. That starts giving you some air underneath of the market. And we're going to be harvesting soybeans in Brazil in another 6 or 7 weeks, and they'll start making it to the market. And if there's no surprise between now and then, that's a lot of demand, and our export demand starts to back off. We've got processors here in the United States who are backing off of making renewable diesel because 45Z requirements aren't out. We don't know when they're going to come out. So if they bought oil now, they don't know if they'd be locking in a profit or loss. So they're just starting to ratchet down production. That means crush margins are going to start going down. We'll start slowing crush activity. So that's both export demand and domestic demand over the next 30 to 60 days backing off. So I think you got to have some type of floor underneath of you if you still own soybeans.
Is it good news or bad news that farmers have less corn marketed than they have soybeans? I mean, relatively speaking, I feel like it's good news, but is it really good news or bad news?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm in the same boat. I only got 65% of the corn priced, and I'm floor under the remaining. But, you know, I was apprehensive. I thought maybe we'd get another pop-up. I thought the weather story in South America was maybe going to dig in a little bit deeper than it did and carry some things forward. But, you know, there's just, like I said, it takes three things for the funds to get really excited. And I always say you got to be firing on all three cylinders to get a really good rally. You need a supply-side story, so you need a weather story. We don't have one. I mean, you know, the crops, record large yield here. I think you're still looking at you know, 5 to 7 million metric tons of more corn out of South America and forecast for next year or this coming new crop. So you don't really have a supply side story. Demand story is decent, strong. Okay. There is no macro story. So the funds are back to flat. Everybody's mostly the funds, mostly the hedge funds guys that I talk to are pretty bearish crude oil. They think crude's probably going 40, 50 bucks. That's not much of a story. The dollar's staying strong. Looks like it'll probably continue to stay elevated to some degree. So you just don't really have a major fund interest in being long some of these markets right now. So without that and without a weather story, you got demand to do all the heavy lifting. And I don't think demand can do it on its own accord at this time. I think ending stocks have dripped down to maybe 1.85 billion bushels, somewhere in that range, because they're going to raise demand. But I just don't think demand will be able to do enough heavy lifting. And if you got beans taking a little bit of a dive and you got some wheat pressure and there's some hesitation, like Arlen saying, we're hearing the same thing on the crush side. And a lot of our investments that we have on the new crush capacity, everybody's putting the brakes on and everyone's not sure what's going to happen. Real rates are staying higher, even though the Fed's dropping and operating capital is tough to come by. And so, yeah, I think the crush is going to back off some. And I think there's a story out there, but it's out there a ways. And it's like anything, you know, it's like anything, Todd. So, yeah, we're worried that the corn could be pulled lower by some of the others and maybe test the lower end of that range, probably down that 380 range. So,
right about now, producers, others that are listening who know will be saying, hey, 1.8, 1.85, that's a story. And don't I remember that really driving the marketplace? What's the difference between 2 years ago and today?
In corn, we were building supplies, and 1.86 is where I've been at for a while, and I'm thinking that I may still be too high in ending stocks on corn, because corn is one place where we are seeing cheap prices build demand. That means cheap prices. So if we rally out of here, we start losing that stimulus, and we certainly don't want to rally while South American farmers are making their planting decisions. So the next 60 days, in the long run, we'd be best off if we keep prices low until they finish making those planting decisions going forward. You know, we've also been seeing the politics of it, and we're very dependent on the biofuels. And I think the market, we saw in the soy oil market getting very discouraged when Lee Zeldin was named head of the EPA. But on the other hand, we saw the soy oil market pop earlier today after Senator Thune was named majority leader in the Senate, because he's been a real friend of the biofuels. And so that's a positive. So maybe we can make some gains there. But how the biofuel picture plays out here over the next year is going to be huge, to see if we can build some momentum on the domestic demand side. And I think the corn export market has been very encouraging as we look at Mexico. Mexico's pork production has been growing. Their consumption of pork has been growing. That's been a positive story. They've been importing a lot of pork. They've been growing a lot of pork of their own. But their corn production has been flat to down over the last 10 years. So they've been importing more and more corn. And they've also had a lot of weather volatility in their ability to produce corn. So they've become a very good customer for both corn and for soybeans. That's probably not enough to bail us out on soybeans, but it certainly has been a bright spot for corn market. And I think that'll continue.
Just for clarification's sake, when you're talking about biofuels being a bright spot, corn for ethanol, corn in a biofuel situation, unless it's SAF,
yeah,
is not building at this point, and not expected to, unless SAF, jet to alcohol, would actually work.
Yeah, and we've got to see that change, because right now Brazil is taking advantage of our decisions, and they're going to say, okay, we'll give you all the ethanol you want for SAF. And of course, they can say sugar ethanol, and it comes down to how we're going to code that, and the government's going to choose winners and losers. And right now they're choosing losers as being the American farmer. Our government is doing that with its subsidies. And, you know, if Senator Thune can get some movement on that, you know, I'm not optimistic as far as Trump himself being a big biofuel supporter. He set, you know, granted record waivers for the ethanol blending requirements in his first term, but maybe Senator Thune can get something going there. But really, we need ethanol as a feedstock for sustainable aviation fuel. We need 45Z guidelines that we can live with. We need to be able to shut down the used cooking oil coming in. We need California not to limit sunflower oil, soy oil, and canola oil to no more than 20% of feedstock, and we need other states not to follow their example.
You have opinions on the biofuel sector and 45Z or any of those policies at all that you want
we
to express?
We need the pipeline. But I mean, it's the same old story, Tom. I mean, everybody wants the pipeline as long as it ain't in your backyard and going through your place. You know, so it's like, I don't know how that happened. But no, I'm with you. I'm agreeing with everything Arlen's saying. And it's you know, it's going to be a crapshoot, I think, in Washington, see how it plays out. I'm definitely a fan of Toon being in the position he's in, but I'm with you. I just don't know how the higher ups are going to, you know, how it's going to go over with the, especially what they're going to try and cut. I mean, if you're going to try and cut $2 trillion or you're going to try and make some massive cuts, I could see him making some cuts in this direction just because I'm sorry to say, I just see that may be a play for, especially if you're going to have Musk in there, he's going to do the cuts. He's going to be, I mean, he doesn't need biofuel. He's got all electric cars. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how it's going to play out. So it's definitely interesting.
So by the pipeline, you mean the carbon pipeline, yeah, to lower the CI score, and that is being held up by producers across their properties in, I think, Iowa, parts of Nebraska, some other places, and farmers in general or farm landowners or landowners anywhere are always concerned about whatever pipeline might come across their property. What should producers do as it relates to marketing corn?
Oh, marketing corn. I'm in agreement with Arlen. I mean, you get any rallies, you got to be putting the floor under some of this market. I think, you know, like I said, whenever the market feels oversupplied, and I said that earlier, I think, you know, when you're 1.6 billion bushels or higher, it's, as a trader, we've always felt it's kind of oversupplied, and we tend to slosh around in that 350, 450 range. If the funds get aggressive and want to add in one direction or the other, you know, maybe you move corn down to 320. If you get aggressive on the upside, you move it up to 480. So we're really probably stuck in that range, somewhere between 350 and 450 is what I suspect, unless the funds get a story that's maybe a macro story. We could push the upper edge, 450, 480. I'd be selling. I'd be pricing. And if you're an end user, you know, and you get down the lower end of the range, I think you got to be buying and booking more bushels. But we price slosh around sideways until people know more about what's going to happen with any of these or there's another story that comes out on the supply side, or you know, somewhere on that macro side.
Yeah, I think we're seeing price levels now for both corn and for wheat where we're unfolding demand, and wheat needs to hold those August lows, and if we do, that'll be a good sign. And I think we have more of a story as the Black Sea cuts back, and wheat and corn can feed off of each other, and that can help corn separate itself from soybeans, is my hope. And so I do see some better opportunities, as I said, in the last half of the marketing year. But you got to look at this not as a bullish story, but as something that says, okay, when we get rallies, those are rallies to take advantage of.
We'll get final words from each of them in just a moment, but I do want to remind you to go to willag.org, get yourself registered for either the Farm Assets Conference or the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. We call those the IFAS series. The Farm Doc team will be at all four of those events. If you go to the iHotel and the Farm Assets Conference in Champaign, the crop scientist will be there as well. The agendas for both are online again at willag.org. Kevin Van Trump, it has been a pleasure to see you again. It's been too long, my friend. A final word for the producers across the Midwest raising corn and soybeans.
Yeah, I'd just say it's like duck hunting. I mean, at this point in time, if when the birds are in the air, you got to shoot. If you're looking to make some sales here between now and year end, if you get some rallies, you're going to have to pull the trigger. I mean, that's really our take. I'm with Arlen. Maybe if you turn the corner into 2025, the early part, there'll be some other stories evolve or some things play out as we see what happens in Washington, or we get maybe a late weather story in South America or some type of spring worry here on a longer term forecast. But, you know, our look is that the USDA is probably going to come out with their early outlooks. And I think the ending stocks numbers are going to be higher. And, you know, the balance sheets are going to look more burdensome, and that's going to weigh on prices. So I think you get some rallies or you get some headline news, take some shots.
And Arlen Suderman from StoneX, your final word?
Yeah, I've been around for a lot of these cycles over the last 40 years, and I think the farmer is certainly healthier now than what the farmer was back in the 1980s when I started this, and that's the good news. That doesn't mean it's not without pain. Whenever we get in these situations with low prices, we do create ways to create demand. Low prices do create demand, and that does bring us into the next level cycle, but it's usually several years in doing that. So we need to be prepared to play defense, to kind of hunker down, readjust our expectations, and take advantage of the opportunities we have to keep the farm stable, to protect the equity we have in there. And if we survive these times, better times do come down the road, and that's when we can start opening things up and focus focus on growth again.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program on our website at willag.org or search it out in your favorite podcast applications. Our thanks go to Arlen Suderman and Kevin Van Trump. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.